The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Now, you might have heard on last night's news that we have a new laureate for Irish fiction. It's a new role in this country, so we have yet to figure out exactly what it is. Author Anne Enright is the chosen one. She is the first laureate, and she joins us now. Anne, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations, you're in order. And how does it feel to be the first laureate?
A bit scary, thank you. It's very grown up. It's a big honour, and it'll be an interesting 3 years, I suppose.
Mm. And there were plenty of people in contention for it, so there must be a certain degree of satisfaction that you were chosen. You were the chosen one.
Well, it was a brilliant panel. I mean, I picked up the phone and Paul Muldoon was at the other end of it, and that doesn't happen every day. And it was just a great group of people that the Arts Council got together to make the decision. So that was wonderful. The whole sense of contention, you know, journalists love a kind of horse race, but it's not a horse race, the writing business. And also this, I mean, they were looking for someone who is available apart from anything else. And so that's one of the reasons I got the gig.
Were you surprised to be chosen?
You never know how things are going to go. I never know how things are going to wash out in Ireland, particularly. I sort of know how and where I am in other territories, believe it or not.
Why?
But Ireland is a shifting ground for me.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's stopped shifting now, I suppose. Your home place is always more complex and it always has more ideas than is necessary or good for it about what writing is and, you know, what stories people want to hear and who we are and what our writers should be and what they should be telling us. And I don't always row in with that. I tell a kind of different kind of story sometimes.
So you don't conform, is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think it's a writer's job to conform particularly.
Mm-hmm. So you're happy to be a contrarian?
I have no choice, really.
Yeah. And what have you worked it out yet, what the job will involve?
It's a growing gig. Going to reflect. I'm the first, and there's going to be a series of laureates after me. It's described last night by the Taoiseach as an ambassador for fiction, so I have to get my shoes polished and my smile on. And to an extent, that's what Irish writers have been doing. They have a kind of diplomatic, oddly diplomatic role, because they've been going everywhere for years, talking about the Irish tradition, talking about the country in a very complex and interesting way. So it just sharpens that up and crystallises it. So internationally, it's easy enough to know what to do. But the job, because it is a job, involves teaching in UCD and in New York. And it also involves a focus that the writer chooses. And I have chosen to focus on the short story at home because it's a wonderful, because I love it as a form. And also the work of getting Irish writers into translation for sales abroad.
Has it been neglected, the short story?
You know, when you're looking at a list of short story writers internationally, you sometimes get a couple of Americans in there, but it's always going back to the Irish names. It is, you know, people like Claire Keegan, Colin Barrett coming through now with the first book of short stories. Very exciting work coming next year from Danielle McLaughlin. It's like, it's where people start off here. And the small presses like The Stinging Fly publish that work, which doesn't happen in the big, huge houses in the UK and the US. So it is a very wonderful and tender plant and it grows here. So it's like, I don't know, a flower in the burren or something. You have to protect it.
Is it destined, though, to always be the poor relation?
If poverty is an issue, I suppose. I mean, the reason publishers don't publish short stories is because they don't make money. But I suppose it's never going to hit the bestseller lists, if that's your question.
Mm. And do you write short stories yourself?
I haven't written one in ages now. And maybe I won't until I've stopped being the laureate again. I was finishing quite a large novel. So I wanted a bit of scope. And it's interesting trying to get back to that close space and very intimate space for me of the short story. It's very close to the reader's ear, you know.
Mm. And I was struck by something you said, I think it's in this morning's Irish Times. You spoke about the internet being like a bit like global warming for writers.
Yeah, well, when you're describing what writers need or what writers do, I think the best model is that it's a kind of ecosystem. And you think, I remember being in the Amazon years ago and thinking, God, you know, nothing could damage this. This is amazing. Look at this sea of green. It's just natural. It happens. But once you go out of the protected area, there were no animals, and you realise, actually, yeah, it is under threat. And you think writers are going to write whatever. They work through boom and bust. They sit in their garrets. They're motivated by something else. There's no wrecking that. And actually, maybe there is, you know, maybe there is a number of things that go into the ecosystem. You know, foreign sales, a bit of money here and there. The income is tragically low for most, the overwhelming number of writers. And anything that helps that keeps it all going. And it's, you know, if you pull one or other strand, it's quite possible that a lot of work would suffer. And the internet is, yeah, like global warming. I think we're like, you know, we're slowly being boiled alive by the internet.
In what way?
Well, it has really affected sales. It has really affected people's concentration span. It has affected, I think, the way people think and the way people reach for answers. Reading a book now is like going for a walk. You know it's going to be good for you. You know it's going to feel better once you've done it. But you have to get out the door. It's a particular thing now, you know. So I don't know what the future holds. I think either writing and reading will become niche and fabulous and not very remunerative. Or there's a risk that we'll go into the academy. People will start teaching in universities, particularly, become a university thing. But the amazing thing that Irish writing has is it bridges the popular and the intellectual and the literary. That the very good writers in Ireland are accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly that is what is being hit by the internet. The idea that it's easy to read a good book.
So are things like Kindle then good for writers, or are you a bit worried?
I can't even think about how Amazon organises their prices. They go up and down every day, and you think, oh, I'm selling well, and then you say that you're getting threepence because today they've put it to threepence. You know, it's like, and then tomorrow it's 10 euros or something like that, and they're very, very powerful. I use a Kindle and I really enjoy a Kindle. There's a difference, perhaps, between people reading books and books and writers making a living. You know, so that's I'm interested in both of those things happening.
Do you worry, though?
There's enough to worry about without worrying about that. But I do. Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned a recent meeting of writers in Oslo, Irish writers in Oslo, was it?
Yeah.
To tell us more.
Well, that was just a weekend. It was put together by a couple of Irish people in Oslo, and it was a literary weekend, and a whole young generation of writers ran around Oslo having reading and thinking about their books and looking at each other. And I thought, there it is. It's all happening. It's there's another good 20 years in that bunch. And I'm looking forward to it.
So you don't worry about the new talent coming through then?
There's no issue about that in Ireland. It's mm-hmm. just amazing. I mean, I thought I was part of a wave. The generation I came of age was a kind of wave. And I realised early on that was good for all of us to be viewed as a collective. But there's more than one wave in the sea. And here comes a new batch, particularly since the economic crash, I think. Mm-hmm. A whole different impulse has come forward.
And talking about the recession and the crash as well.
Well, people contemporary literally lost issues. Their jobs and started writing books.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally went home. And there was nothing else to do, some of them. You see it in their CVs. Worked in this newspaper. This newspaper folded. Now I've written a book. You know?
Yeah, instead. Yeah. Mm. And you would hope that they would make money out of it, although that is the big imponderable.
That is the imponderable. I mean, to bang on about money makes me sound greedy. I'm not... Particularly, I just want the business to keep going and to thrive in some way.
Mm-hmm. And the money is nice with the laureate job. Does that mean you can put your tools down and concentrate on the
role? Well, it's a kind of a bit of a balance because there is a large teaching component to this. I have to teach in UCD and in New York, so that feeds into the work in some interesting way. But yeah, it makes it hard to do an extended long project. There is real ordinary work involved as well. I think a part of the job description is that I should continue with my creative work. You don't want to kind of hire a writer and kill a writer at the same time. So,
So you will find time to write yourself.
I can write in the airport. You know?
Can you?
I can. Mm. I'm like in Finland. You see children doing their homework in the airport at the.
So you have your Apple Mac or your laptop?
I have my laptop, but I'm always thinking about it and it's always talking to me, and sometimes I'll talk back.
And how do you do that then, that those moments when you have that creativity? Do you just remember them then when it comes to writing, or do you do it there?
Just open the goddamn machine and type it up.
I see.
Or, you know, if you've got 2 hours, there's always something to do.
Yes.
Clean up your commas. God knows my commas need a lot of cleaning up. So, right.
And for some very nice text in. Nice to hear from Anne Enright on your show. I always think when I am reading her books that something is annoying her. Can you ask her? Can you ask her if I'm onto something? That's from Frances.
Certainly in The Gathering, something was annoying the narrator. And I would draw a distinction, not just between Veronica, who ostensibly wrote, was the voice of The Gathering. So she's kind of different to the author of the book. And that author is also different to me. I can be cranky. But I mean, that was a very dark book. Veronica was in a very difficult situation. She'd lost her brother to suicide. There was abuse in the family. And she had very good reasons to be annoyed. She had good reasons to be angry. It's quite taboo for, angry voices. Some people take them one way or the other, or don't like them, or resist them, or enjoy them, or are empowered by them. Anyway, you can take it whatever way you like, but there are good reasons for a woman like Veronica to be angry. And that was reflected in the style of the book.
Is there a bit of you in her?
There's always a bit of you. There's always a kind of nanosecond, you know? That you, there's always some part of your impulse is in that impulse of fiction. The next book that I have coming out in May has more scope, and it has moved from character to character. And so your caller, I hope, will see that, you know, some things annoy some characters and other characters aren't annoyed at all.
Right, they are different.
They are different.
And how long have you spent on the new book?
I think I'll have to dig into my archive now and find out. You know, there's always a sad moment where you say, oh God, that took me 2.5 years. But I think it did take me 2.5 years, yeah.
I see. Yeah. And you're happy with how it is?
Happy. Yeah, happy out. No, I'm. It's done and I'm pleased with it. Yeah, I am, yeah.
The way it worked out. And can you just broaden the plot for us there a little bit?
Yeah, it's about a family again. And it's actually, you know, The Gathering had a big family in it, but it was more, I thought it was about memory and history and imagination. But there you go. People thought it was about family. This one is more about family. There's 4 siblings and they grow up in the west of Ireland and they leave and they go away and they're in America and they're Africa. They're all kinds of, but one stays at home and looks after the mammy. And they have these full, complex adult lives. And then in 2005, the mother declares, like King Lear, that she's going to sell the house and divide the proceeds, and they have to all troop back for a family Christmas and fit back into their childhood, you know, beds, rooms. And, I'm saying they bring their inner child home with them and they meet their outer mother.
Okay. Sounds intriguing anyway. And it's put to bed now at this stage, is it?
Yeah,
and it's out.
Yeah, I changed an A to a the. That was me done.
I see. Okay. Niamh Wexford says, very best wishes to Anne. Met her on a plane whilst I was reading The Gathering. We had an amazing discussion about the book. I only realised very much later who I was chatting to. A very charming lady and a very fond memory.
Wow. Hi, Niamh.
A happy customer. So over the months ahead, you have your latest book sorted, and I presume that there will be a lot of travel as part of this job as Laureate for Fiction.
Yeah, I have an invitation previous to the laureateship to Burma. And I think that's, you know, to go as laureate to a country like that is a whole other an amazing sort of opportunity.
And what will bring you to Burma specifically?
Well, you know, there's an international festival circuit. So I would go to, I mean, Burma doesn't have a huge books market, but I'd be over in India a few times for sure, you know, because there's a wonderful readership there. And yeah, that's part of the circuit actually now, is Burma Irrawaddy Festival in Mandalay.
And is that part of the opening up of Burma?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been to it myself. It's a fascinating country.
Yeah.
So you're looking forward to that
hugely,
trip. Yeah.
Hugely.
You mentioned also about when it comes to authors that the real success, or if they want to achieve success and monetary success as well, that translation is the thing now, getting their books translated.
It's a kind of hidden thing because we see writers, you can see in the New York Times if somebody's on the bestseller list, you can see if they're in the New Yorker. You see how the States is going quite easily now for Irish writers. In the way that, you know, the traditional route is to go through London, take America, and I don't know, die happy. But the hidden thing is that, you know, how important France is and Germany is, and increasingly how important China is. And there may not be a huge amount of money in China because the books cost tuppence. Mm. But how astonishing to sell in China, you know. What does that do to your head and to the idea of Ireland in the world as well as everything else?
Mm. What would your advice be to new writers, people who are starting off and wondering perhaps whether to pack in the day job and go at it full time?
Well, that's two different pieces of advice. Before I packed in the day job, I published my first book, and so I spent the weekends writing a first book of short stories before I left this venerable institution called RTE in 1993, I think. And I think you need a little bridge. You need just to put a plank down from one job to the next job. So don't throw everything up in the air. But my advice to writers is to sorry, get over yourself. It's you know, people say it's really hard, and I look at them like, yeah, and they say my book isn't, I can't write my book, and I'm going, yeah, so yeah, that's the gig.
Yes,
just keep at it.
Persistence. Yeah. Well, it's been great to have you in this morning, and congratulations on being appointed the first Irish laureate for fiction. Anna, anyway, thank you
very much.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.